CliffCentral.com.
It's good to check in with George Meany. That means it's Friday. It means the weekend has begun. Good morning, Borge. How are you?
Good morning, Gareth. How's it been?
Hey, George.
I'm good. Yeah.
What are you up to? What are you driving, flying, or piloting this weekend?
Tomorrow there's a big bushcat gathering.
What?
A bushcat, which is a type of aeroplane, the one that I fly.
Okay.
It's a South African-built two-seater, they're all flying to Middelburg Airfield, and everybody that owns a bushcat is flying in there. So
wow.
I organize these things from time to time, yeah.
Okay.
Go fly there, land, have a bit of breakfast. It's almost like a motorcycle breakfast run type vibe.
Very nice, George.
Very, very nice.
I just want to put a picture up on the screen of this bushcat so people can see what we're talking about, because we did have your plane on the show not so long ago. You were in the hangar and you had it actually sitting behind you while you were talking to us, but I thought maybe people who didn't see that might want to know what it looks like. This one is painted in zebra stripes, black and white. There it is. So that's the little plane you're talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Although mine's not a tail dragger, it's got a nose wheel, so it's a slight difference, but same airplane.
Very nice.
That one's quite popular, actually. That one, there's one like it in South Africa as well. It's often used for anti-poaching, because they're very nimble and almost like a zippy little car in the sky.
It's very cool. Very cool.
George, do you all have special like bushcat leather jackets that you then sort of compare?
No, I'll wear a Water Trader one.
I'm just because it sounds like those Harley clubs that you see these guys going on a breakfast run, except you guys are
exactly.
You're one tier up from them because you're actually flying to your various places. That's cool.
And then you could have like your special bushcat like code name on the back of your leather jacket.
Correct.
George, I reckon you should sell bushcat merch. Get like a side gig going there.
Yeah, I just sell bushcat merch, but motorcycle clubs do that. I used to be a cyclist, and cyclists were very similar as well. It was all about the kit.
There's no need to embarrass yourself by bringing up cycling, George. Yeah, there's a lot of horrible things in the world. Let's just try to keep Fridays positive, please, if you don't mind.
Well, that leads me into the first story, Gareth. I sent you a link to a short video there. So this man, this car dealership. In America, in Belgium, this car dealership in Belgium couldn't understand why they had saliva on the cars that are parked on the sidewalk every day. They find the saliva running down the side of the car, and they couldn't figure it out. So they went and they reviewed the CCTV footage, and that's the video I sent you.
Right.
And it turns out this disgruntled cyclist every day rode past the cars and spat on them.
Good Lord. What's his problem? Because when you said saliva, I thought it maybe was in Kwazazana Dlamini Zuma and when people put saliva on their paper. You remember that? That was like 2 years ago, but it was a huge, huge hit. So I thought maybe it was her. But what was the reason the cyclist is spitting on cars?
They don't know, but the owner of the dealership dealership's name is Auto James, ran out with a bucket of freezing water in winter and toppled the bucket over the cyclist. They timed it. They knew every day this guy's going to come past
you. I love it. Good. That's the way to treat cyclists.
Exactly. And so that's what the dealership
owner did. That's hilarious. Look at that. There it is. And the cyclist is wearing like an anorak. And I don't know if you could even call them a cyclist. If you dress like that, you're really just a bicycler.
You call them a bicycler.
All right, very good. That's the way to deal with cyclists. We like that.
The ones that spit on your cars, I suppose. But there's another more interesting story, I suppose, and that is a man in Colorado has been collecting. I don't know if you ever collected Hot Wheels, Gary.
Yes. Funny thing, yesterday I actually drove past a shop where they sell like hobby stuff, and they had in the display window, they had a whole range of Hot Wheels. It's a big thing.
It's a very big thing, and this guy has collected over 30,000 Hot Wheels, some very, very rare Hot Wheels.
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal display that he has.
We got to get this guy on Collectomania. You know, on Mondays, we do this thing called Collectomania where we talk to people about their collections. And I'm sure in South Africa, there's someone who's collected all the Hot Wheels. If you know who that person is, or if you are that person, then send us an email, contact@cliffcentral.com. We want to talk to you.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, this guy's name is Kevin Feely from Firestone, Colorado.
Isn't he Britney Spears' ex? Isn't that his name?
Close.
Oh, Kevin Free. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Something gave
Kevin. It. Kevin Federline's the guy.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Quite right.
Yeah. I'll send you the link if you want to get in touch with him.
Right. Cool.
But 50,000 Hot Wheels this guy's collected, and then this guy from you know, again, nobody really knows, but everybody thinks it's Florida, decided that in a flood situation. Mm-hmm. To drive his Corvette, he's got a C8 Corvette, and wade through the water. Now, if you have a look at the image of him wading through the water, let me just get it up here. If you look at the image of him wading through the water, mm-hmm. you will see that he. There it is.
All right, let me put that up on the screen. Go ahead.
You will see that he's almost under the water, and
wow.
And the car kept going, but nobody knows who this guy is, and this image appeared. I mean, the car can't run for too long that deep in the water.
So
it's just impossible.
What is? I mean, you know, you see a lot of these Land Cruisers and Land Rovers that have like an elephant's trunk next to the driver's side, and that's supposed to help the car through swampy water to keep the engine aerated, I suppose, and to keep water out of the important parts. So it would almost isolate those parts of the engine that cannot get wet from the rest of it. What is the general expectation for something like that to be able to last in water that deep, like we've just seen in that picture?
Well, what happens when you enter the you don't necessarily need the snorkel, as they put it,
because
the air intake is the thing that sucks the water in,
right?
Because it's sucking air in. So you don't need the snorkel, provided you are wading. You're pushing the water away from the car,
okay,
and then it creates this little vortex and vacuum inside the engine bay. But at some point, if the water gets deep enough, it will get into the engine bay, and most air intakes are at the top of the engine. At the top of the bonnet,
right.
So you're not, you know, the water has to really rise into the bonnet of the car in order for the air intake to get in. And then there's a, you know, electronics and all that stuff that could be damaged as well.
And of course,
so
a lot of these cars are not built to be submarines. So the water is going to leak in through the dashboard or whatever else it is, even if it's a really well made car, because they're not meant to be underwater.
No, they're not, exactly.
Right.
So I would imagine. I mean, this was a random picture that nobody knows exactly where it is. I think it's Florida, and I would imagine that Corvette didn't wade for too long through that water.
Mm-mm. No, I like that. That's interesting, though, that if you lose momentum or you stop, then obviously the air intake is completely screwed. But if you keep moving, usually, you know, if you're moving at the right speed and you're creating that pressure outwards, then you're usually okay. I didn't realize any of that. Cool.
So you just got to keep moving through the water, but you know, don't go there in the first place. Have you ever waded, Ben, with a
No. No, I don't really want to either. People always go, you got to do these things. It's like, yeah, I guess, but then it just seems like a lot of work. But I just think that that's one of the most Florida pictures ever, because that guy was like, screw it, I'm going to do it. He's probably got a gator in his back seat as well.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Probably in the front seat.
Or a leather jacket from Gator Skin.
He's definitely got a leather jacket with something on the back.
All right.
And then lastly, Gareth, there is a research study that's going to start in the beginning of next year. A crowd called Go Metro is going to bring in a electric Toyota Quantum, mm-hmm. You know, the taxi.
Yes.
And bring Toyota Quantum to Cape Town, and they're going to set up a charge station, and they're going to see whether taxi can be operated with an electric vehicle.
What's the bet that the taxi association will attack the poor guy who's got the electric taxi and like beat him up because he doesn't have to fill up with petrol? So I don't think this is a great idea. Unless everybody gets an electric taxi, no one should get an electric taxi. That's how the taxi associations think.
Good point. But some of the studies done so far, the taxi drivers themselves are very much for it.
Really?
Because I believe, this is kind of hearsay, but I believe that the way the taxi drivers get remunerated is they have to pay a fixed amount to the taxi owner.
Yes.
And all other costs are off whatever they collect.
Well, as long as they disguise it to look like a normal taxi, you know, make it look like it takes petrol, then you should be all right. But the moment it looks different, it's going to get the same shit that Uber gets or that any of the other taxi services get. The taxi drivers just do not tolerate competition. They don't think of it as a they don't want an equal playing field. They want special protection. And if they can't get it, then they'll just beat up those taxi drivers who don't do the same thing they do.
Well, I suppose that doesn't only go for minibus taxis. It's also the other taxi part of the industry, which, I mean, look at what happened with Uber, like you say. Around the world, there seems to be this, taxi anti-disruption.
The other problem, George, is, I hate to say it, but Eskom. You know, if you've got an electric taxi and you're relying on Eskom, you could be in a lot of trouble.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you've got a commute to do or a route to do and there's a two-hour, I agree with you. I mean, I've said up to now that load shedding does not impact owning and driving an electric car. And it doesn't because I live with one every day because you can charge it overnight. But with a taxi driver, you might have to charge it during the day, which disrupts your route.
Yeah. Well, let's see what happens. I mean, the more we can have options, the better. Of course, you and I and Ben, we're not talking like taxi drivers or taxi owners. So what do we know? All right, George, thank you very much. Have an excellent weekend. CliffCentral.com.